Hello, creatives. It is Amy. I'm here for a little pre-ramble. Oh, I'm here to discuss a few things before we dive into this incredible interview with Caroline Calloway. I just wanted to give you all some context in case you are unfamiliar with Caroline Calloway, who is a memoirist and author, and is really kind of an icon of like millennial influencer scammer culture. We are discussing her new book Scammer in this episode, but I really wanted to kind of like fluff out some of the stories we're talking about because we do go in and we kind of raw dog it. There's no context given. So Caroline became really well known on Instagram for telling stories, very romantic, very like all-encompassing stories about her time at Cambridge University. And she was first cancelled and called a scammer when she did a creativity workshop, which was deemed basically overpriced and disorganized by the media. And she had to cancel them. And she herself was kind of canceled for basically just having an unorganized system. You can have a little Google of it if you want. Like, I personally think that if you look at some of our creativity workshops, like sometimes our catering hasn't turned up. Like, we've had to, you know, apologize, made our dates wrong. Like, I can't see a huge amount of difference between Caroline's creativity workshops and some of the mistakes we've made as, you know, entrepreneurs who are trying to serve the creative community. And that was really the big first issue that came up and labeled Caroline a scammer. There is also the fact that she was given a big book deal by a very large publishing house and that she didn't fulfill it. So she became indebted to the publishing house. She couldn't write the book. This is why this conversation is so interesting, because she has such a huge and very, you know, public relationship with writer's block. And we're really going to dive into that. Another big contentious issue that we talk about is the fact that she has been trying to self-publish this novel, this memoir, for many years and took pre-orders as far back as 2020 and just has not been able to write this book. And so there's been a lot of anger at Caroline because she took people's money for this book and she hasn't been able to produce it. Obviously, now she has. I have read it. I actually completely fell in love with her story. But we're going to get into the details of what it's like to be, you know, so publicly cancelled, to not be able to produce something you've promised you wanted to produce. A really complex story there. And then the final thing that I feel like we talk about with very little context is that her best friend, who helped write her initial book proposal and also helped write some of the content for her, you know, big and influential Instagram, Natalie, wrote kind of like a deposé piece in The Cut, in which she basically just publicly shamed Caroline and told the world what a chaotic person Caroline is. Talked a lot about her addiction, and yeah, it's a wild and wonderful story, guys. You can just Google Caroline Calloway if you really want to like beef up the context around this conversation. But this is at its heart a conversation about overcoming failure. It's a conversation about being cancelled. It's about exposure to the public eye. It's about writer's block. It's about desperately wanting to tell stories and to write books. And it's about perseverance. And I honestly haven't had this much fun recording a podcast in so long. She's just a fucking hoot, guys. Like, she's so funny. She made me laugh so hard. She didn't really realize who I was until halfway through the conversation, which I found to be a real joy. Anyway, I hope that gives a little bit of context around the conversation. Again, if you're really interested, just Google her. There's a whole heap of stuff out there on her. Some of it incredibly unfair, in my opinion. But all in all, very interesting, super informative, super important conversation for creatives, and I really, really hope you enjoy it. Hello, creatives. Welcome to another episode of the Unpublished Podcast. My name is Amy.
I'm James.
And today we have Caroline Calloway, author, memoirist, like just one of the most incredible creatives I know on the pod. Thank you for being here, Caroline.
Having me. I wish I could be there in person in Oxford, just vibing.
As I said, welcome anytime.
The castles and you. Yeah. I cannot wait to someday, next time I'm in Oxford, we'll do a follow-up. I'm like already planning the next episode.
You might hate it. You might hate it. You might be like never talking to them again.
True. Honestly, you might hate what I have to say. You'll be like, that girl is just as evil and unhinged as everyone says.
We'll both make our judgments after the pod. Okay, we'll reserve judgments now.
Yeah. We'll send each other a little like Google question.
Yeah, yeah.
Would you do this podcast again? Sort of vibe.
All right. Me and James both have so many questions. Caroline's book, Scammer. Both of us have read it in the past week. I've fallen in love. It's one of those books that you read, and as authors, like, I felt, even though it was a memoir, I've never had this with memoir, I felt like kind of ill that I didn't write it personally. And I feel like that's one of the biggest compliments a writer can give another writer, when you read something and you're like, fuck, it's annoying that this isn't me.
I think that might be the single best thing that you can tell another writer.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a masterpiece. Like, I like the phrase a masterpiece, quote unquote, was like the best thing that I thought that was just the pin of, this is actually like has just displaced those compliments, and this is now like, well, I'm ready to fill out the Google questionnaire. I'd love to come back. Thank you so much. I have to go catch a flight to Heathrow now because I'm coming to
an emergency. No, I really mean it.
That is just that. You know, I'm not a happy person and I'm not happy often, but I am so happy in this moment. And thank you so much for making my very broken brain chemistry feel this.
A little buzz.
Well, yeah, I really mean it. It takes a lot to reach me.
Oh, I'm so glad. We're really excited to talk to you about process, about craft. Like, this is a podcast for creatives and for writers. So like, we're excited to kind of get into like the details, if you don't mind.
Yeah, totally, totally. Ask away. And I have one question too. What is your process like? I want to hear about your process because I want to know how abnormal my process is. Like, I want to.
Well, first of all, let's just acknowledge that everyone's process is incredibly different and we all have beautiful processes, and you wrote a book with your process. So I trust your process. And no, I wrote a book with my process.
No. I actually think it might be illegal to recommend my process because it just involves so much alcohol. Like, it's like
Hemingway it's style.
Like, it should come with like one of those like terrible like smoking pictures of like a diseased lung, like that. Like, you can do this writing process, but like the Surgeon General recommends
Well, that's what we were going to ask you about, because Amy and I feel like that we're very workmanlike in our writing. Like, it's almost sometimes I think we get people feel like we take the magic out of it a little bit. Like, we're just like, wake up 7:15, you know, write for an hour.
That's our process. We write shitty. We're big on writing shitty words, and we do it for an hour each morning on the weekdays. Yeah. I do it for less than an hour. James is has a bit of a longer attention span than me. But like, our goal for me, it's sometimes to write 300 shitty words. James tends to write 500 shitty words.
It's Mike. I think in Scammer, you mentioned the Simpsons writer who says, you know, make the your shitty. Is it the shitty elf? What's the metaphor?
Be your own crappy little elf.
Be your own crappy little elf. Yeah. And that's very much our process. It's like, just get really bad writing out there and then fix it up later and get it out regularly every day.
Okay, listen, I'm glad you started with the best compliment I've ever received, because this is an emotional roller coaster for me, because what you just said is like honestly my worst nightmare of like what you could have said. Because I aspire to that. Like, that is like what people who say you're taking the magic out of it are fools. Like, that process of like a little bit every day, instead of being like totally extreme and having to like upend your life, is like the dream, especially now that like the next books that I put out, I'm either going to have to hire more employees to like do all the manual labor, which I've started doing, but like I don't have enough hours in my day right now to do what my process is. So here's what my process was for writing Scammer. And again, sort of like, you don't operate heavy machinery while you do this. Like, don't if anyone hurts themselves, I take no responsibility for you doing this. Hunter S. Thompson once said about drugs and alcohol, I wouldn't recommend them for everyone, but they worked for me. And that's sort of how I feel about my process. I call my process gremlin mode, which if anything tells you from the title, it's not like, like, I'm not awake at 7:15 is what I'm trying to say. I wasn't awake for 7:15 for a single day that I was working on Scammer.
Incredible.
I I really just like uprooted my whole life. I stopped responding to texts. I just stopped exercising. I just put my entire life on pause. And I would really only work for tasty treats. Are you familiar with the concept? I'm talking.
Oh my God, the suspense. Caroline?
Okay.
Yeah, so yes, so you work only for tasty treats.
Please explain.
So I think God, in her wisdom, just cut out my Wi-Fi because she was like, this is just- like, I'm going to force you to have another 90 seconds to think about if you want to finish the rest of that sentence.
Hey, totally optional. I was going to say totally optional, but no, Amy's going to make
know about the tasty treats.
Yeah. Tasty treats are basically just, you know, anything. It's pretty much self-explanatory. I have fried foods, more fried foods, cocktails. More cocktails. Basically, like, if you had a gremlin as a pet, anything that gremlin would be like, nah, 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 over, like, that is that's tasty treats. And so I work only for tasty treats. And so what I would do is I would wake up around 11 or 10.
Great.
Depending on how fried my brain was, I'd look at if, like, my brain was really fried, not hungover, which is a different thing that we'll get to, but I mean like fried from how much work I had done yesterday. I would look at TikTok from anywhere from 0 to 3 hours.
Yep, great.
So I would do that. let's say it's a 3 hour day.
Okay, great.
So now it's
how 11. Do you feel at this point?
Now it's 2 p.m. I feel alive. I don't know. I feel not dead. I don't know. The idea is that you don't
check in.
Yeah. The point is you're trying to numb yourself. I don't know. We're stupid questions while I'm explaining gremlin
mode. Sorry. Keep going.
So it's been like 3 hours of TikTok. Now it's 2 p.m. And I sort of think in my head, okay, to assuage the guilt I feel for watching so much TikTok, I think to myself, well, you're going to have to sell the book someday and you're going to need to know which TikTok sounds to use to sell the book. So that's enough market research now. Good job doing market research. And I sort of pat myself on the back and push the guilt deep down. And I'm like, very good job. Time well spent. Excellent work. And then it's 2 p.m. And I sit down at my desk and I open a Celsius, which I'm now addicted to as a consequence of gremlin mode. I don't know if Celsius is even like legal in the EU.
We don't have them. I hear a lot about them, but we don't have them.
I think you could buy them probably on the internet. It's basically like Monster Energy, but for like Pilates mommies. They took the like trucker energy drink that people who drive trucks across America and need to stay awake for like 20 hours at a time or they die. They took that and they basically just like, I don't know, added some green tea and like brought the calories down and like removed the worst of the chemicals. Oh. But it's still very much like the nuclear grade for caffeine.
Sounds kind of delightful.
Yeah, it does sound delightful.
It honestly is great because it is like doing drugs. It's drugs. So
I mean, we just have four or five shots of espresso to get the same effect.
Yeah. So. That's exactly how much caffeine I think is in one of these. Yeah. Like truly, like I think four or five. Because now when I like drink a latte with a double shot, I think this is a little less than this is like not quite a Celsius, you know?
Okay, so, wow. She's powerful.
So I have a Celsius and depending on how hungover I am. I have some sparkling water because I love sparkling water. But ideally, you're not that hungover. Like you've made a mistake if you're very hungover. You've gremlined too close to the sun.
Yeah.
You went too hard and you're not doing it right. You should have a little bit of a headache, but like nothing debilitating.
Okay,
and great. That headache could go away. And that for all you know, that headache is just because you've been awake for 3 hours and haven't had your Celsius yet. So could be anything. So you drink your Celsius and your sparkling water. You sit down at 2. You just write nonstop until like 7 p.m. So like 5 hours. And most of what you're doing is you are fixing stuff that your crappy little elf left you yesterday.
Yeah.
You're fixing stuff. And you're also just trying to get, I think of like for Scammer specifically, all the chapters take place in like different kingdoms is how I thought of it in my head. Like this wouldn't work in like a really like interior focused novel where like the whole thing plays out in like, you know, one house. But you could maybe make emotional kingdoms within that. But my book literally takes place in like different places in every chapter. And so I would just sort of think about the kingdoms that I was trying to bring to life that day. And I would usually try to write more than I ever did. But it always works for me to like shoot for the moon, land among the stars. That's always been a great way for me to work. And so I just try to get as many as I would. And then this is really key. I terrorized my friends. At this point, I'm like,
I wasn't expecting that.
I was like, Cut Piece already came out. What are you going to do? Sell another one? Oh no, how will I survive? Like, I'll fucking make it, you know? So my friends were so sweet. I had just a crack A team of this guy who went to Harvard, who's now a Biden speechwriter, this guy who did English Lit at Cambridge, then creative writing at Oxford, then got two fellowships to do creative writing at Columbia. And then I had a guy who's a Rhodes Scholar, like twice for a master's and then Rhodes Scholar for a PhD because the Rhodes Scholarship people liked him so much.
So he's pretty dumb.
He can't spell. Yeah, I'm teaching him how to read. I'm using Scammer.
You're so good, Caroline.
How to read. Yeah. I'm a saint. Actually, that's the sequel to Scammer. It's just called Saint, colon, a memoir. But and then this other guy who doesn't have all the fancy credentials. So don't call me elitist because one out of four writers is just a normal non-degree person, but he's really a really sharp editor and really great with typos. And what I would do is I was just terrorizing these four friends. I was in constant communication with them. I'd send them a draft and I'd be like, an hour later, I'd be like, have you read the draft? I was living like I wouldn't make it to see 32. Like I was not exercising. I wasn't treating my body well. I wasn't treating my friendships like I would be alive to need them. And they were great. And I think my friends, since this book was such a long time coming, really understood.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
That this was a big deal and that I was really, it was like all hands on deck code red mode.
Yeah.
But it really, really helped me feeling like, and they were just so sweet. My friends were so amazing. They'd send me chapters back and they'd be like, you're brilliant. This is amazing. Like for all I know, they just didn't want to edit it. They're like, I have very few notes. I'm like, yes, I'm a genius. But like little do I know, they just don't.
What's
important, right? When your parents, oh, that's a bit of a Freudian slip. When your friends, with your work, and then I know, right?
Sorry, but like you, as soon as this podcast is over, you guys need to work through that.
I know, right? I'm calling the therapist immediately. Holy crap. Hopefully they don't listen to this. But when your friends read your book, especially I don't have so many writer friends as you do. I think that's awesome. That's an amazing network that you have. And I'm really, really jealous of it. So, you know, you give your book to normies and they're like, I don't know. And you're like, all I want you to tell me is it's good. Just say it's good. Even if you're lying, just say it's good. And then I'm going to feel better about myself. And then I'm going to do a better job.
Yes. And it's so crazy because I actually it wasn't just that I needed the emotional support to keep going. I genuinely feel like the book got better and better with every chapter because they just were hyping me up so much and just telling me that and it just helped me get over so much anxiety about writing, but not enough that I didn't start drinking at 7 p.m. sharp. This is when the tasty treats start. I haven't had any food at this point. Keep in mind, just caffeine and water.
You and also, it's exhausting writing for 5 hours. That's fucking exhausting.
On enough Celsius, it is okay. But that's only because it is like literally like cocaine in a can. But yes, it is very tiring. So this is when the tasty treats start. I go out to a restaurant that is open till 11. And so now we're in the second 5 hour shift. And the only exercise I'm getting is like the 3 minute walk there, and the 3 minute walk home. But you know, it did keep my like blood from clotting in my veins. So it was enough. And then I go there and I was just bleeding money during the writing process. Mm-hmm. I was just hemorrhaging funds. And I think this is, listen, no one should ever take financial advice from me, first of all.
I don't think anyone's going to, Caroline.
Yeah, that's a self-report that I even thought anyone would take financial advice from me. But I do think that Gremlin Mode is a little less insane when you've put in your time at the factory of the internet and like paid your dues and you've established a following and you know that there's a certain amount of people who will buy the book once it comes out. Mm. It's a little less insane. But that being said, I was spending like, I'll be so fucking for real with you, like $100 a day.
Mm. Yeah, I don't flinch at that. I understand that. Yeah.
And it's just absolutely unsustainable. And I would go out and I would have a nice meal and I would have like 5 fucking cocktails, like 6 maybe, which is not, and I'd have like some cheaper cocktails interspersed, like a Corona and lime is really refreshing in Florida. It makes me feel like I'm at the beach, even though I haven't like seen the beach and like physically in person in like months at this point. But you know, writing Scammer only took me with that routine. I wrote the whole thing in 5 weeks.
Fuck so, off.
Yeah.
I was about to ask, how long was Gremlin Mode?
It was 5 weeks, but I uprooted my whole life. Like, yeah. I don't think anyone should like really compare.
Yeah.
You're never going to finish something in 5 weeks if you're only writing 1 hour a day. But that being said, you're able to live a whole fucking life while you're writing, which is like my dream, because Gremlin Mode is like so unsustainable. And it's like I can't do another book like that, mainly because I love my friends and I can't put them through that again. Like, I would put my body through that again, no problem, but I actually can't do that for my friends. And I need to, like, I very much understood that like this was like a one-time thing for them. Like, they were so kind and gracious about it, but like they also have lives and I can't just be sending them drafts at like 11 p.m. asking them to turn the like 3 chapters around by like, you know, 5 p.m. tomorrow my time, like that. I could do that once but never again. So I actually don't know how I'm gonna write my next book.
It's interesting,
and I don't recommend the way I wrote the first one.
Do you think there was something to, and I think maybe Amy, you might relate to this a little bit, but because both of you got your start writing on Instagram, and you're used to, as you said already, Caroline, you're used to having stuff immediately get feedback from people. Do you think that having your friends there immediately to see your writing was crucial in the process because you'd learned to write that way in so many ways?
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, something I really talked about with my therapist, something you should try.
Honestly.
But
you're telling me.
I talked a lot with my therapist because I found the process of writing so lonely, just compared to writing on Instagram. And I really, you know, Amy, I am going to sound so fucking dumb right now, but that's fine with me. Like, won't be the first time, won't be the last. Are you at Inspired to Write?
Yes, I am.
Oh my God. As soon as I got on the call, I was like, you look so much like at Inspired to Write. When I used to follow people, I've been following you for ages.
I still remember when you followed Amy. We were so excited.
To me. I love you. I've got your typo hats and I'm like, just
yeah, we had the we've got the titty paintings as well.
I got titty paintings.
Oh my God. Okay. Sad that it didn't make it into the podcast studio background, but
We didn't bring any art from Sydney over to Oxford.
It's back in Sydney.
I still got it. It's in Sydney.
I'll send you some new art for your home. You have to. Oh my gosh, this changes everything. This is so special for me. I've been following you for forever. I love your stuff, and your stuff helps me so much.
I'm so glad.
During the years when I was like, I mean, nothing that you made is supportive of gremlin mode. Let's just be very clear. what you're suggesting is a good thing that people should do, unlike gremlin mode and tasty treats, which is a bad thing that people should only do in an emergency.
But it's only for emergencies.
It's really only for emergencies. It's like your ex-best friend has like sold you for a third time. Honestly, you know, I want to tell the story of how I actually broke through my creative block.
I want to hear it.
It's a really great story. But all those, first I just want to tell you, thank you, because for all those years, before, when I was just struggling with, I felt so much guilt about not writing. And I just, you know, something I thought about a lot when I was writing Scammer is how little writing there is about not writing. Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of writers, that we grow up with so much doubt, external and internal. Like, you know, just, I can't count the amount of times that someone said to me like, oh, good luck being a writer, or like, ugh, you'll never make it as a writer, like pick a different job, like, you know, and you internalize that. And then on top of that, you have your like own self-doubt of like, can I do this? Will I make it? Am I good enough? Am I falling behind? Am I like, is this person better than me? Am I even capable of this? Am I making a mistake? Am I dumb? Do I even have anything to say? You guys are like, no, we wake up at 7:15 and we just get to work.
Don't you worry.
There's a lot of gnashing. There's a lot of gnashing of teeth that's involved in the 7:15 wake up.
That makes me feel better
because I don't think I've been awake at 7:15. I can't even blame gremlin mode. Regular mode doesn't even have me up.
But we have to fall asleep before 10 o'clock. Otherwise, it's just dead.
Our chronotypes.
Yeah.
Caroline, we honor your...
You're so lucky that you guys found each other because...
I know.
This is wild. I didn't even know... That's great for you.
We haven't been to a party.
It is a bit disgusting.
We haven't been to a party for about 10 years.
You don't really want our lives, Caroline.
I don't know.
But that's, I mean, of course.
I don't know. I went up the stairs the other day and I was out of breath. Gremlin mode really took a toll.
I agree. Like, there's nothing, no one speaks about the pain for writers who aren't writing. And no one speaks about.
Except for your Instagram account. Except for your Instagram account is where I was going with that. And it just, I felt so alone in my struggle with just my own creative process. And I just found so much solace in just looking at your Instagram account and all of your posts where the attitude is like, it's hard for me too. And also like, you know, done is better than perfect is sort of like the theme of a lot of your posts, at least the ones that stuck with me. And they were just so helpful and they meant so much to me. And I'm so glad there are not two beautiful blonde-eyed nose ring women out here being writers, because I was like, you look exactly like this woman on Instagram. But I was worried to say something at first, because then you'd just be like, oh, what are you talking about? I would be like, what are you talking about? And then like the podcast would just have weird energy from the get-go. But then it just became too overwhelming and I could not say it. But
I love this. Incredible.
Anyway, have you guys both published books?
So I've self-published all my books.
So I'm a fairly new writer, so I never would have written if it wasn't for Amy's encouragement as well, and also her Instagram. So for ages she'd been bugging me to write books, and then about 4 years ago I decided I would actually give it a go, and I haven't published anything yet. I've written a lot. I almost have the opposite problem. Like, I write a lot and I finish a lot, but I am terrified of sending it out to anyone to try and get it published.
Wow. I wonder what that is. Brains are so different.
Fascinating.
Yeah, you guys having to go to sleep before 10. Like, for me,
crazy.
I struggle with not having the instant gratification of like public approval, you know? Same. Yeah, you know, it's having the friend network there, the like four friends who were like with me in this writing process. And you know what's so great is I've actually made so much money with Scammer that two of the friends are now on the payroll, except I really hope the other two friends don't listen to this podcast. I didn't hire them because they have real jobs and they wouldn't take my money. Like, you know, I'm not paying better than the fucking Biden administration, you know, like I don't have Biden money to like, but one editor I'm giving, my main editor, I'm giving $4,000 to, and my other editor, I'm just asking him to look at typos and I'm giving him $1,000.
Amazing.
I know.
Well, I'm basically your editors, but I'm Amy's husband for Amy. So she supports my lifestyle. She keeps me in comfort. And in return, I occasionally copy edit her books for her.
Okay.
James always says he's going to sell something to the cut because he does occasionally write my Instagram posts.
Oh my God, I have the funniest stationery to send you guys. I have so many questions to ask you too. So you self-publish, how do you raise the funds?
I'm literally watching you in awe the way that you're doing it. I did it through Amazon and KDP and did it that way, which is like, you don't need funds, Caroline, because it's all print on demand. Like I needed money for an editor and I needed money for a cover designer. And that was like maybe $3,000 all up.
I just think saying that the thing you lose out on then is that the amazing thing that you're doing with Scammer, Caroline, and having the luxury edition, like you just couldn't do that with Kindle. Or you couldn't do that.
I
have to send you guys a care package. Amy, text me your address right now. Or you know what?
Immediately. I will do it.
Immediately. James, you talk for a bit and Amy, you text the address. It's okay. It's okay. You know what? I can wait like 40 fucking more minutes until this podcast is over. Do not forget, okay? I swear to God, I gotta send you a whole CC care package. I have some stationery you'll love, and I gotta get you guys two luxury first editions, but you can't do the luxury first editions at all.
No, so like, you know, my, like, I don't have control over the quality of these books. I mean, I've got control over the cover. I can choose like, I can even choose like texture and like paper stuff, but like otherwise I'm not seeing these books at all. They're getting all done and created on demand. So when anyone buys them, they're printed and shipped off, but not by me. So my manual labor, I'm not doing any manual labor, Caroline.
Wow, how does your back feel?
My back feels fantastic. Yeah. And your back doesn't, but you're also—
My back doesn't. And I'm doing this podcast lying down. Because like any moment when I'm not doing books, I have to be horizontal, like with a pillow, like an elderly person. Yeah, I don't think Gremlin Mode was great preparation for the physical marathon.
Oh my god,
I love it when Australians say no.
No.
Oh my gosh, guess what? My segment with Australia 60 Minutes is coming out next week.
Shut the fuck up.
The podcast won't be out before next week, right? I think I'm like allowed to say. But the woman who coordinated it, her name was Naomi. Well, Naomi, but I loved
Naomi.
I love it. I would go out of my way just to
Believe you got 60 minutes. That's so exciting. Yeah, big deal for the Aussies.
Yeah. Don't say I don't love my Aussie fans.
You know, in my research, I was going through Google Trends for you in Australia, and you trend highest in Canberra, unfortunately.
Oh, that's the loser city.
It's the loser city.
Oh, what is
I'm joking. Canberra's like our big, actually it makes sense because it's our capital, but no one ever knows this. And it's where it has a huge university. It's a huge university town. It's where all the public servants and all the academics live.
And that's your place.
Apparently that's your demographic. And also Sydney.
Yeah, I definitely don't think it's the public servants who are interested in me.
Probably the uni students.
I think it's the uni students. I'm going to go out on a wild limb here and say that it's definitely the uni students. But,
where were we?
Where were we? I was...
You were talking about how lonely it was. And I would love to come back to that because I think that's something that I really experienced as well. And I was reading back on my journals because I can't stop journaling. And I was looking at this time when I was writing before I was really connecting with anyone. And I was talking about how I felt like I was writing in a vacuum and it felt like so meaningless. And like I was almost like gaslighting myself into not even believing that I had written. And like, it just felt such like a weird process that had no actual consequence, and it was really damaging for my mental health. I hated it.
This literally sounds like my therapy sessions. Like my therapist literally uses the words like, how do we make this like so you're not writing in a vacuum? Like the enlisting my friends was very much like it spiraled into definitely don't do that again. Mm-hmm. But it started out as like a very intentional plan of how I can like make myself feel more like tethered to like an emotional human connection in my writing, because I just felt very like out in outer space. But I have more questions about the Amazon thing. So oh, yeah. So in this business model, you need no upfront cash.
Yeah, for the publishing part, I pay for an audiobook recording because I got to be in the studio and I'm recording audio. But
and we do have a contractor, Linda, who does. So we don't want to have to deal with the KDP backend stuff. So we have a lady, Linda, who does all that for us as well.
She like just does the IBSN numbers and like kind of deals with like, basically I don't want to do any admin. And so Linda does the admin and we pay her like $1,000 or Australian dollars. So like, can we pay her $1,000? A bit more.
No idea what was.
Anyway, it's not. We choose to do that. You don't have to do that. So the costs like really can be so low. It's very accessible, but you do lose a lot of control.
And you lose, I think you lose
30% to Amazon.
Yeah, 30% to Amazon.
Oh, damn. Mm.
I've also self-published by just putting up my books on my website and just having them as like nice PDFs. And that makes us.
That was the best. That was how we got our start. That was essentially how we started having a business, because we just put everything on Amy's website. People just came through and on a Squarespace site.
Squarespace.
Just downloaded a PDF.
Yeah, I mean, mine's literally Shopify. I mean, I'm selling. Yeah,
exactly.
I've been joking on podcasts that my book is available nowhere books are sold. Like if you walk into
a shop.
That's
really good. That's a really good gag.
Yeah. And you see books, that is like you.
Not where his camera is.
Yeah. You already are in the wrong place. So, yeah. But part of my business model was, so for this, I had to save up like 67 grand before I could start. And I did that by selling three things, which I all tried to make sort of like scammer branded, but I couldn't, they obviously weren't a book. They had to be like scammer adjacent. So I sold snake oil, which is face oil. And then I sold grift cards, which are the stationery I'm going to send you. And they're little like CC themed, like, instead of like gift cards, you know, but you get it. And then tarot card readings, which were
incredible,
which honestly brought in the most money out of anything just by selling them for $15 each. I just was like, I was moving mad.
I love it. Cards. We're talking today. We talked a lot about you today, obviously, because we're very excited. And we're talking about just like
as we do every day.
Every day. It's just a regular thing. Yeah. You're so entrepreneurial and like, I really see a lot of myself in you and just how strategic you are and how like business oriented you are. Like, it's very cool. And I think it's a very cool, like, as a writer, it's like an incredible addition to what it is we're trying to do and how we're trying to get our books out.
We were getting fired up about the flack you got for your creativity workshop, because we basically we do them too. And we do the same thing.
We do the exact same thing.
And we're like, but it's just, the difference is that no one has written an article about it and called it a scam. Like, literally, you know, the first one we ran, we had our catering just didn't turn up, you know, and suddenly everyone had no food. And you're like, well, what the fuck do I do about this? You know, there was, we realized that the Airbnb was going to not allow us to do our workshop there. So we had to do it in secret. Illegal. Like, it was all, everything, basically, it's so difficult.
The only thing we didn't have were the mason jars, but otherwise it was like a shop remake.
The same thing. And it just was like.
Literally, you know, the thing that really, a couple things happened that were really bad luck for me. My first workshop was the weekend that the two Fire Festival documentaries dropped, which was just
bad luck,
bad timing. And then on top of that, something that I have that you guys don't have is that so my creativity workshops were like a very delicate time in my career, because I'd just gone like sober from Adderall. Obviously not sober, but amphetamine sober. And I'd been gone for 18 months and I like just sort of trying to get on my feet again and just learning how to like rethink myself through the day without meth. I mean, like, literally, can you imagine how bad I was to hang out with on Adderall? Like, this is me, like,
raw dog in it.
Yeah, it was a nightmare. But I was the nightmare. And it was also a nightmare for me getting sober and getting off of it. And I came back and I was in $100,000 worth of debt to my publishers. And so but they also owned the rights to my copyright to my life up until 2016. And right now we're in the December of 2018. So like, I couldn't even write a different book without like, and they were being very nice about not suing me for this $100,000, but I really didn't want to like poke the bear in terms of like pissing them off. So I was like, I'll make these creativity workshops and I'll just like workshop my stories in person. Like I'll tell these stories about addiction. And I also didn't know how to transition my brand from fairy tale to like obviously I went to Cambridge and I wore the ball gowns in the castles. Like I didn't like AI those photos of myself. Like those were real. That's really me. Like I was really there. But like there was also so much darkness going on that I hadn't spoken about at all on the internet yet. So it was a really perfect storm of like me bringing my brand, trying to bring my brand into like a darker place. And the two Fyre Festival documentaries came out. And on top of that, I think I say this in the book, but like hating extremely online, conventionally attractive women is the last guilt-free prejudice this world has left. Like you can literally like, it's, you can talk about a woman who's conventionally attractive with lots of followers in like the most, you can say the rudest things about her and like people won't blink an eye. But like if you say that about any other demographic, like even just like an older woman who's a mom, like people would be like, that's misogynistic, you really need to watch your fucking mouth, you know. I think that the perfect storm of the two Fyre Festival documentaries, the fact that I am disorganized and that lots of people don't know that like chaos is the brand, the fact that I was trying to make my brand darker and expand it, and I was in $100,000 worth of debt already, like that looked terrible. Like it looked like
it was a perfect storm.
I also think being in Australia for us, like you're kind of in the backwaters, right? Like no,
yeah, we're out of sight.
I think it's hard to do anything and make a splash in Australia.
We're trying. Yeah,
it's, so where do you know where most of your books go? And so are most of your books digital?
No, I...
America is by far
the
biggest for all, everything for us, for all sales for, of any kind, for creativity workshops, for our online workshops, for books, for...
fiction, nonfiction.
Listeners of the podcast, everything. It's New York is our biggest city and the rest of America. And then after that, I think it's Seattle and then
maybe LA.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Big... That's so funny. Mine goes New York, London, Seattle.
What's going on with Seattle?
The Seattle Times like did like a whole thing on Scammer. And it was like their most, the woman who did it texted me. She was like, this was our most popular story. Like the day it was out, like it was like our.
What a great place.
Yeah, I know. Have you guys been?
I've been once.
Yeah, we went to Seattle. My uncle worked there for Amazon for a while and we went and visited him and it was fun.
It was fun, yeah, but like nice. Wouldn't expect our fans to be there.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so here, something that I'm trying to do with my business model, and I love learning about yours because ours are so different. Like I'm very much with Scammer. I'm trying to move like less product, but at a higher price point.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah,
I love it. I love the price of your book. Like I really love where you've chosen to put it. And I often, me and James have this conversation all the time. Why are books so cheap? Like they're like whole worlds. They're like, what the fuck?
You know what's so crazy? You go to the symphony, it's gonna cost you what? For good seats, $110. You get that experience once. And when it's over, it's over. This book, you can go experience that for the rest of your life. It's your
Exactly. Yeah. And like you pay for like a course and it's like 5 hours worth of video content and a book, way longer, way better.
Way better. I totally agree. But you know, something, I actually want to move to a real publisher. I don't see self-publishing as the end game. And part of the reason I priced it at $65 was not only because I got really excited about just like, I thought I may have like an Italian marbled paper kink, to be quite frank. Like I'm so into this fucking paper and I love the craftiness of gluing it together and tying the ribbons and doing all the pretty packaging, but I want to move to a regular publisher. And I have always thought that, you know, it makes a more compelling argument for why a publisher should take my book seriously. If like my $65 collector's item art piece is like not a product that competes with their
I really like that
paperback.
I love that.
It's not just that like I want publishers to give me money, and which I do, like I want money. And I don't think I should be ashamed for saying that.
I love it.
I'd love to like buy my mom like a house, you know?
Yes. I'm so excited for that day when that happens for you.
Italy. Yeah, she actually already has a house, but I'll buy her something.
She can have another one. She can have another
better house is what I'm saying. Yeah. But I I really want that, but I also like, I want the publisher to put resources into my book. I want them to make it one of their top titles for when it comes out of that season. I want their publicist to be like booking me for things. Like, I want them to put resources behind Scammer when it goes there. And so that's another reason why I didn't want to compete with the product that they would eventually. But do you ever want to go to a regular publisher? Like, what is your...
Yeah, it's been an interesting journey. And I'm really glad that I've kind of gave myself permission to do this by myself for a long time. I think that a traditional publisher will definitely be in our journey. In fact, there's been a few like things happening for us, which has been interesting, like navigating the differences and what they offer. And actually reading your book for me came at a really interesting time, because I was having a few meetings, and just the way you, I mean, I know that things went south, but the way you handled your agents and the publishing in that meeting when you were like not listening, I was like, fuck, this is such a vibe. Because I think writers and creatives in general are taught that they're like the lowest of the low, and that if you're in a publishing meeting, you've got to beg to be seen, you've got to beg for them to have it. And the way that you showed up in that space as like, I'm the fucking creator, I'm the writer, like, respect me, I'm number one.
You'd be lucky to have this book.
You'd be lucky to have it. And I love that. And this is a shift that I want all creatives to step into. Like, we're the creators. We turn nothing into something, but we're treated constantly like we have to beg for stuff. And I fucking hate it.
Totally. Totally. And I, so can you tell me, I'm so sorry that I didn't understand.
Baby, don't worry.
We're at Inspired to Write. If I had known that I was about to like blow my chance with being friends with Ad Inspired to Write, like I would have fucking done some homework before this podcast and like Googled this a little bit more. But what are the books you've written? What are the titles? What are they about?
So I write historical fiction.
Really fucking
good. I know. And like
historical fiction.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. That's nice. So, and I also obviously I write nonfiction about creativity as well. So my fiction is The Rules Upheld by No One, which is like some like vaguely, it's not smutty, but it's about a story about a 16th century noble woman who ends up going into sex work. Wow. And my last book, Regrettably, I'm About to Cause Trouble, is about witchcraft in the 16th century. And then I have one coming out at the end of the year, which is a detective novel, 16th century Tudor London.
How do you not, you know, I obviously... I'm such a reader of historical fiction. I love that shit. Obviously. I love it a little smutty too. Like,
yeah,
just
a little sprinkle.
Yeah. I really love me some fairy smut. I love fantasy. Yeah. Like, I love all
Sarah
of that.
Sarah J. Maas.
Mm. Oh, huge Sarah J. Maas girl. Huge Sarah J. Maas girl.
Wouldn't expect anything
like that. Yeah. My favorite book is A Court of Silver Flames. But anyways, I digress. I feel like if I ever, I would love to someday write like a fantasy novel.
This is what we really want to talk about. It.
Yeah, I have to set it though in like the way that like Harry Potter is like, it's not necessarily, nothing's happening in the news that makes you think that places it in like modern day, but like the technology is modern day.
Yeah.
I would love to do like a fantasy school based on Cambridge someday.
Oh,
I think I would be like great at perfect. That. But how do you not get totally fucking bogged down in research? Like if I wrote anything in a historical time, I would spend 10 years just reading about like what people were like eating and call it and just be like, and I'm working. And well, I would
We both have history degrees, and I've got a master's degree in history as well. So it's like, we've already front-loaded it.
It's very handy.
That's amazing. Okay.
But I also want to say it is like really hard. Obviously like specific things, like you're just writing and you're like, well, now I need to know about like how, when they went to the toilet or like what the fuck they used to wipe their butts. And yeah, it's
totally,
like,
totally.
And you get distracted and it's like, it does add a lot more time to it. But I also think you just have to be so strict with South Carolina. You have to be so strict.
Yeah. So you can't gremlin mode the research.
Constrained historical gremlin. Like he will, like, you know, give gremlin 3 weeks.
Just to do the
Just researching. Just to look up toilet stuff. But all research.
I'll research. I was like, that sounds realistic. I would spend 3 weeks on that rabbit hole. I was like, that actually does not sound. It was like, what do you think? Not being
strict
looks like. That's very lenient.
Although, but I remember Samantha Shannon did a post recently, a few years ago on Instagram, and she was like, I spent a whole day just figuring out what kind of hats people would have been wearing in a certain situation.
Yeah.
I guess you just got to do it sometimes. Fun. Yeah. It's like, that gave me one line in my book.
Fuck. Yeah. Anyway, yep. Literally both of us were like, we have to ask Caroline if she wants to write fiction because we think that she'd be an incredible fiction author. Mm.
Yeah, so I have a huge plan for what I'm going to do. Do you plan out your books? Like, how many books do you have planned?
Yeah, so I've got my book coming out at the end of the year. Me and James are writing a sci-fi book together. It's really fun.
Oh, my God, incredible. When does it take place?
5,000. You have 5,000.
Love. Oh, yeah. I should have added sci-fi to that list with Fairy Smut.
You'd be great at that.
I love that set. Sure.
And then I am like at the process of just starting a few more ideas for the next one. So I'm 3 ahead, but I also know that's not true. I also have a fourth nonfiction that I know I'm going to write. I've got 5 books that I know I'm going to write at the moment. Do you have like 20?
Yeah.
James has a lot more, but they're more.
They're just loose notes. I have a lot of notes in my notes app that are just like book ideas, but.
9 of mine are just day books. So they're not like beefy books. You know, it's not like I've. And 3 of them are for like a thing that I'm not going to say it, but 3 of them I wouldn't have to do a lot of writing for. But what I really want to do, my main thing that I think is just like my purpose in this world, is to make what I call in my mind the Cambridge trilogy, which is, and we were like, for like,
oh, ever, yeah.
Like life. And it's actually going to be like, it's think of Scammer, but like expanded is sort of
great.
The vibe. But I'm going to put like, 9 more books between Scammer and We Were Like, so that people sort of forget about Scammer, because I want it to be like fresh material for them.
But, honestly though, it felt like there was, and this is like, I don't know how you did it, but it felt like such a great full story at Scammer, but I was so fucking hungry for more, and I could just feel the gaps that you were leaving. Like the fact that you were able to market all your future books in this book, I was like, she's a fucking genius, and it's sickening.
Yes, I actually really believe that the right time to market your book is 5 years before it comes out.
You're doing it, girl.
3 years is still enough time, but here's what. 10 years is too long. I did 5 years for Scammer, and it was like, it was 5 too long.
The burden.
Yeah, it was like, at a certain point, like, I overcorrected. Like, it was much, like, I could have done less promotion. But you know, I have to go back and check on my new employees, because this is their first day of work and I left them. But I want to talk about one more thing before I go,
sure.
Which is how, so you started writing, James, because Amy encouraged you.
Mm-hmm.
And Amy started writing because she's a creative genius who inspires the world.
Of course,
naturally.
One of the reasons I do think that Scammer was able to be written in 5 weeks was because, one, it was such a long time coming, and I thought about it and thought about it and thought about it, thought about it for years and years and years, and had so many notes. But I also, it had to be written in 5 weeks because I had just put it off until the last minute. And you know, my ex-best friend Natalie, who wrote about me for The Cut, it's funny, she has, I realized this the other day. She's actually used me 3 times, but I only got angry about it once. And the first time she used me was when she sold that essay to The Cut, when my creativity workshops went viral, and she reached out to them, pitched a story. And then the second time I feel like she really used me was 2 days after that story came out, when my father's body was found. I feel like she really swooped in, and like, you know, the same day his suicide was discovered, like hours later, we were on the phone and she was trying to offer me her forgiveness and her friendship if I would just sign my life rights to her for $15,000. And I still wasn't even angry because I was just so fucking bereaved. Like, I Natalie, like, trying to, like, I don't know, like, dupe me into a business deal or like use my grief wasn't even like top 5 problems. Like, I was being publicly shamed. My dad had died. It was a gruesome suicide. Like, I had just so many fucking other issues. I just had no room for anger. But this past winter, a friend in publishing leaked her book proposal for her book. And my name was just all fucking over it. In her original proposal, she actually like used me to sell the book more than she actually used me in the book itself. But in the back end document that she pitched to publishers, it was like, I'll expand my cut essay. I'll talk about Caroline's Adderall addiction. Like, I'll write more about like how our this about our friendship. And I was so furious. Like, I was just so angry. It just felt like it had been 4 fucking years. And like, I was just so sick to death of being used. And the way I finally got through my incredible writer's, in the book I call it not just writer's block, but writer's paralysis, is that I was just, I think anger can be a really destructive emotion, but it can also, anger plus a purpose or a goal can be incredibly constructive. And so the last thing I wanted to say to anyone who's experiencing the severe, debilitating, crippling writer's paralysis that I lived in for 10 years is to get angry, to honestly like just get angry about something, because for me that was like the only antidote powerful enough to like propel me into action.
I love that.
Amazing.
I actually really, really resonate. Like, I think I got really angry, and that's how a lot of anger is how I take up space and write books. And I was angry that people told me I couldn't do this, that people, a lot of it was around creativity and how people thought that it was impossible and that I shouldn't do this and that I was avoiding adult life. Like, I used anger to use that. And I'm so glad that anger was able to serve you in that way.
I agree. It's so powerful. I feel the same way. I feel like that I was a coward for so long, and I was putting it off. I was putting off writing for so long. And it was really anger at myself that propelled me to start writing my first book.
Mm.
And anger at the stagnancy that I'd had and that I wouldn't pursue this thing that I really wanted to do.
Yeah.
Stagnancy is such a good word for it. Mm. And, you know, I just think that, like, listen, if you're out there and, like, you gentle parented yourself through that stagnancy and got yourself moving, good for you. Don't listen to us. You're fine, okay? Great, good. If anything, come on the podcast. I'll listen to the episode, explain how you're doing it, and that would be really helpful for all of us. But if, like, anyone who has gentle parented themselves through stagnancy and it's not working, I just can't recommend anger plus a purpose highly. It was it was the only thing that finally got me just so fucking angry. I was like, oh, my dead fucking body, is this bitch going to use me another time? Like, I am putting out my own fucking book. She is not going.
It's your story. I actually felt like vindicated.
Oh my god.
Like, there was a feeling, and I think that was part of, like, the addiction of this book, was, like, it was vindication. And that's why I felt emotional through it. I was like, fucking hell. Like, this is, you get to tell your story, and also you get to tell it so fucking brilliantly. And, like, I kind of feel that anger in, like, the best kind of way as I read that book.
Yeah, I mean, it's very much my Reputation album. Like, it's a...
Yes.
It's tender, but there's also a lot of kick in there. And, you know, James... Before I go, I also just, like, I don't know why you don't want to share your writing with people. And I wish I had a better language that made my consternation sound more supportive, because now that I'm listening to myself, it sounds like I'm like, how could you be so crazy? I don't mean to sound like that. I just mean, like, that you should, you know, something else that really helped me is the time will pass anyways, you know? Like, the time will pass whether you show it to people or you don't. And, like, the years will go by. Like, I hope you just show it to people. Maybe just get angry.
Maybe you'll listen to Caroline fucking Calloway, not me. Maybe finally
Caroline's the person who's going to... You're right, Caroline. I know. I think that I need to get angry again. I think I've become too safe. I think that I've made such a good job of becoming the gentle parent to my writing that I have no anger behind it anymore. It's just, like, almost like a meditation practice or something.
Yes.
I've lost the anger.
Stop doing that. You overcorrected. You got too healthy.
Yeah, I know. I did.
A little toxicity for spice.
Big time.
No, but seriously, yeah, definitely get angry again, because it's just, I would hate to see, your gorgeous, sustainable writing practice not being like put to something that the world can also enjoy, you yes. know?
Hey, but you know, I am the ghostwriter for this one and I'm going to sell that story to the cut.
Honestly, so... there's not a day he doesn't threaten it.
Yeah. You're like, oh, we weren't joking when we said we talk about you every day.
Every day.
He's always threatening me with the Natalie treatment.
Yeah, every day.
Oh, thank you, Caroline. That's thank you.
Incredibly wise, and I think you're right. I think that I
like this idea of accessing some anger, accessing some fire.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I feel like it's the only advice that it's like, I would do that again. Everything else, my writing practice, I'm like, listen, to be so fucking for real with you, this is what I did. If things go according to plan, I will never do that again. Yeah. Like, it's sort of how I feel about
that.
We
need to take each other's energy a little bit.
Yeah, we do, I think.
Well, like, all three of us.
We're good balance for each other. Yeah. Like, they're like so calm and sustainable. And I really like, you know, now that I have to be marketing scammer and shipping scammer and
such a big job.
Also promoting scammer going on the podcast, I can't send someone else to go do that.
You can't. This has got to be CC.
Yeah, it's got to be me. And I really need to get to a place where I'm doing like maybe more than 1 hour, but definitely less than 10, because like I just don't have 10 free hours a day.
No, you don't. Because so, you're a writer. You gotta write.
Yeah, I gotta write. But I'm so excited. I'm gonna buy your books. Don't send them to me. Baby. I wanna pay for them. But I'm gonna go buy them and go check on, unless my employees
have
robbed me blind, in which case I
write a book about it.
A very long scam from them on the scammer.
Yeah. They really were in that for the long con. They're sure, we'll help you glue books together. But it's just a felony instead. But thank you guys so much for having me. I genuinely had such a fun time, and I
so love
it. And I cannot believe I got to meet one of my celebrity crushes. And
thank you, Caroline.
Random straight white man. Like, that's great.
I know. Lucky you.
I don't usually meet such a supportive straight white man. You really got yourself a keeper, Amy. And I really feel like what you guys have is like, I know that I would choose my art over anything, like over my own limbs. Like, if they were like, do you want both your hands or to be one of the great American writers? I was like, give me that hook. Like, let's fucking go. Like, I would choose it every time over anything. And so it really touches me when I see a couple that I just feel like really support each other in their art and just really help each other grow as artists, because I fear coupledom, because I've never found someone that I felt like I wouldn't prioritize over my art. And that's on me being toxic. That's not on other people. That's fully on me. But like, I love that you guys have found a way.
But I think you should be allowed to prioritize your art. Like, I don't feel like Amy has to.
I'm
very happy letting Amy be the front person in the relationship, you know? It's kind of appealing to me.
Yeah. No, I'm yes. And I need to find someone who feels that
you
way.
You deserve that. Yeah,
because it's not just that like it's try to hold me back. It's more complicated than that. It's more like I use my love for them as like one more excuse not to.
Yeah, write. That's so like, interesting.
It's like, of course, let's go to the zoo today and make
together, good the catch. Two of
us, you know,
really interesting.
Yeah.
So. Before you go, Caroline, do you want to plug anything in particular? I guess we're going to put all the links in the show notes, so anyone can just go straight to the show notes and we'll have the link to Scammer right there.
I often do at this point in podcasts, because I actually feel like it works better than just saying like, and I'm at Caroline Calloway with one L on Twitter. Don't find me. Don't look for me.
I'm not in bookshops.
Don't Google me. I'm difficult. I'm mysterious and hard to reach. You couldn't find me if you wanted to, so don't even fucking try. And I'll just leave you with that.
So,
perfection.
Amazing. Yeah. I'm going to stop the recording.